Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a Critical Care Pharmacy podcast. This is episode 156. In this episode, I'll discuss how to evaluate drug interactions. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode156. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. The Critical Care Pharmacy Academy is a place for pharmacists and pharmacy residents to gain practical, critical care knowledge and skills. Inside the Academy, you will find monthly video-based masterclasses, weekly Critical Care Literature Digest, and members-only forums to connect with other pharmacists and get answers to your Critical Care Pharmacy questions. For a limited time, you can get a 2-day trial of the Academy at pharmacyjoe.com/trial. The ideal response to a potential drug interaction depends very much on the context of the level of care the patient is receiving. For example, in episode 112, I discussed the combination of linezolid and fentanyl and the risk of serotonin syndrome. In an ICU setting with intense patient monitoring, this combination is acceptable. My tolerance for risk of the linezolid-fentanyl interaction changes outside critical care settings. Monitoring is less intense with a higher nurse-to-patient ratio on a general medical unit or in an ambulatory setting. Additionally, alternatives to either medication are much easier to find outside of the ICU. Third-party drug interaction services are often of little to no use in determining the clinical significance of a potential drug interaction. Whether it is fear of being sued or some other reason, many references overstate the risk of potential drug interactions and water down their service with drug interactions of minimal risk. Authors Philip Hansen and John Horn published in 2001 an operational classification system for classifying drug interactions. They call it ORCA. They described 5 different classification levels for drug interactions based on risk versus benefit and the action that must be taken. Class 1, there's no situation where the benefit outweighs the risk, such as using pseudoephedrine plus a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. Class 2, avoid use unless there is no alternative or the interaction is desired, such as warfarin plus aspirin. Class 3, an increased risk exists, but monitoring may be an acceptable course of action, such as low doses of fluconazole with 3A4 substrates. Class 4, minimal risk, and class 5, no interaction. Hansen and Horn publish annually a guide to the top 100 drug interactions using, in part, the ORCA system. The 2017 version of this guide was just released, and you can get a link to it in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode156. While the guide now contains far more than 100 potential drug interactions, the authors do a superb job focusing on only the clinically relevant interactions that are class 1, 2, or 3. I've been using this book in my daily practice for over 10 years to weed out the clinically insignificant drug interactions. Not all drug interactions are known, and new drugs arrive on the market with limited drug interaction data. To allow clinicians to predict pharmacokinetic drug interactions in unstudied combinations, Hansen and Horn also publish an extensive listing of medications that affect and are affected by the cytochrome P450 system, as well as other transporters such as P-glycoprotein. You can see a snapshot of this chart in the show notes. The chart allows clinicians to identify interactions between enzyme inhibitors, inducers, and substrates. In addition, if a medication has a primary pathway of elimination, that is identified in the chart. This extra piece of information can be used to hypothesize on the degree to which an interaction may be significant. For example, although amitriptyline is metabolized by 1A2, 2C19, 2D6, 3A4, and P-glycoprotein, the primary pathway of elimination is 2D6. Using this information, a clinician may choose to allow the use of a 3A4 inhibitor with amitriptyline with the knowledge that many other pathways for elimination exist. This is a great example of a drug interaction that is going to show up in a third-party software, but you can use this guide in order to weed that non-significant interaction out. Hansen and Horn's Top 100 Drug Interactions also contains guidance for antibiotic interactions with warfarin, interactions with herbal products, as well as genetic polymorphisms of cytochrome P450 enzymes. Now, the Bex section of this book has to do with evaluating QTC drug interactions. My method for evaluating QTC drug interactions draws heavily from Hansen and Horn's book, and I discuss this extensively in episode 12. I highly suggest if you've not already listened to episode 12 about QTC drug interactions that you take a moment to do so. In brief, two things I keep in mind about QTC drug interactions are, number one, be risk averse whenever possible. Take, for example, a patient with no allergies on Sotalol prescribed levofloxacin for community-acquired pneumonia. As long as their renal function is good, this is a low-risk interaction that I could just monitor. But ceftriaxone plus doxycycline is just as good for community-acquired pneumonia and completely avoids the risk of torsades. Why would I take the risk when I have another first-line treatment that doesn't include the torsades risk? Things get murkier when you have to decide between using a second-line drug or monitoring the interaction. Take the same patient, but then give them anaphylaxis to penicillin. Would vancomycin plus aztreonam plus doxycycline provide the best cure for their pneumonia? How do I balance the added risk of toxicity that using vancomycin brings? Sticking with the levofloxacin and monitoring the patient in the hospital might be more reasonable here. This brings me to my second point, that is, EKGs are cheap and non-invasive. You should have no hesitation asking for one if the purpose is to evaluate or monitor a QTC drug interaction. Literally, the cost to the hospital is the ink and the paper. The machine and the technician's salary have been paid for already whether you order the EKG or not, and this fixed cost doesn't enter into the equation. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.